Welcome to another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and today our guest is Jason Dotley, singer, songwriter, and producer, who is also a fan of numerous gay bars, and we'll hear about those in just a moment. So, welcome, Jason.
Hi, buddy. What's going on?
Not much. I'm just kind of excited. We've been trying to get this interview together for a while, and finally, we managed to pull it together. I know you've been going out to some of the gay bars for a while, and my whole project is about recording the history and stories of gay bars all over the country. So I'm really excited to hear about some of the bars you're going to talk about, because nobody has talked about any of them yet. So the first bar you mentioned was called Jerry's Bebop. Tell me about Bebop's.
All right. So Jerry's, if you like New Orleans, but you don't want to have to get all the way into the insanity of New Orleans, then you go to Mobile. It's built the same way. They have the parades. The gay nightlife is 24/7, because when the public one has to close, the one right next to it is a membership only, and it's open all night. It's just great. I've lost my train of thought.
Jerry's is still in operation, by the way, I think.
Oh, okay, yes.
But that's
okay,
cool.
So not only that. No, thank you. So basically, okay, Jerry's is a downstairs area with like pinball machines and pool tables and a bar. And then upstairs is a huge dance floor and a stage. And the dance floor, back when I started working there, was entirely lighted, like in the 70s, like each square tile illuminated. So like your name would fly by, or, you know, the colors, and they really cared about what, you know, the gay bar that they were serving to the people of Mobile, Alabama, and it showed. And they were the first place to ever hire me. And so you were forever grateful to the first person that says, yeah, I think maybe you'll make me some money.
So what did you do there?
I think I was probably, the first gig was promoting my first record. So it was probably me performing two songs, or maybe just one. And it was the song that was out on Billboard. So I was having to make club appearances and sing it to help, you know, drive it into people's ears. Because if you're not a pop song or a radio song that's remixed, people don't know your music unless they go out all the time. And then they just know, oh, I love this song. So
they kind of help launch your music career.
I'm sorry?
They kind of helped launch your music career there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What kind of crowd did they have there? Was it a pretty mixed bar, or was it all like preppy white boys, or what kind of people go to Jerry's?
Oh, no. Oh, my God. I say this with love, because most of them are my family. One of these people actually is most likely my cousin. It's a lot of white trash. I'm a quarter white trash, so I say it with love, because those are my people too. There's a lot of like drag. There's a lot of lesbians. They all intermingle, which is something you don't see hardly anywhere. And I wouldn't say it's majority white. I mean, no, it's majority white. Okay, yeah, for sure. But I wouldn't say that there was any noticeable lack of diversity in the space.
Yeah, that's somewhat common in smaller city bars. Like in LA and New York and Atlanta, the bars tend to segregate more by race and by gender. But in a lot of the smaller southern towns especially, you get a lot of mixture, because there's only one or two really good places to go to begin with. and everybody wants to go there. So, but that's pretty cool. They've been around for like 30 years now, which is pretty amazing. The next bar that you mentioned was Foo Bar. And I thought it was kind of amusing. One of their slogans that they used in their advertising said, "This is not your father's gay bar." I don't know exactly.
It might be your daddy's, but maybe it's not your father's. That's for sure. It's in my late teens and my very, very early 20s, I went out like partying and I did Molly like two or three times a week and I'd go to all the clubs. And that ends for most people, like within, you burn out in a year or 2 years, your body just is like, this isn't working anymore. And so you phase out. So Foo Bar has everything. And then also, I'm sure it's not code. I can't imagine it's code. But like there used to be a guy, they have a pool table that at night they put a piece of plywood over so you can like dance on it. There's a dancer and then you can dance on it, whatever, whatever, whatever. Well, they had a guy like regularly who just for I don't know how long what his shifts were, but he just sat on one of those like fuck machine bikes and this dildo just plowed him for like the whole party. Like that was just his. You know, that was his contribution. I also, and this might sound really vulgar, but it's, I can't help it. It's the truth and it wasn't my doing. I always, before I launched a club tour, would have my friend owns Foo Bar in St. Felix, check that out as well. He's the greatest. And I would write him and say, "Hey, I'm leaving town next week to start doing these shows. I've been in rehearsal. I just need to perform once live before, but you know, no promotion, nothing. Like the night's going on. I take the mic, I do my songs, I'm done, just to get me, you know, get me like in the groove." And he always obliged. And so my ex-husband loved the Go-Go Boy, and I was fine with it, you know. And he asked me, he said, "Hey, can my favorite Go-Go Boy, can he dance, you know, while you sing?" And I was like, "I don't care, like, fine." So I get on stage, which is a very tiny stage, by the way. And
we lost.
Like when I put my, I lost you for a second. Sorry, my battery. I'll plug in soon. When I was on stage, I could put my hand up and very easily actually like lean into the ceiling. So this is how like tight of a little space I'm performing in with this guy. And thank God this was like 2009 before great cell phone cameras or, you know, a lot of the main social media. But I'm performing and I have my hand up on the leaning against the ceiling. And I started to feel the back of my pants kind of get wiggled down. And I thought, oh, he's just back there like doing like, you know, something dirty. And I mean, there's no choreography to this. It's just, it was going to be me singing. There is on my tour, but there wasn't for this night. And so I'm just going with it. That's what you do, right? And then I noticed that he gets the back of my pants down all the way below my ass. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like what is happening here? Like, why is my bare ass out right now at Foo Bar? And so I'm just stunned and I just keep singing and I'm still in that same position.
So you put your pants down below your ass.
Yeah, my pants are below my ass. And he starts eating my ass while I'm singing.
Like, right then.
Fully, and what are my options? Like, you know, like snack him away. That seemed too rude. And it was also, it was Foo Bar, you know, and that's what he wanted to do. It was Foo Bar. I was down. The only thing I questioned was that, you know, a lot of performers, myself, sometimes, depends on the gig, right before we go on stage, we have to take like a crazy shit. It's just the truth. It's like you get all those nerves and anxiety, you know, they come out of you. And it was like he had no idea the territory that he was landing in. Like, he didn't know what my day had been like. He didn't know anything. And so, I don't know. Cut me off. We go to the next one.
I'm sure that did not make the FUBAR top 10 of all time list, though, because I've looked at a lot of their ads and I've seen a lot of their promotions. And it seems like their whole concept is wrapped up around the idea of big dicks, bare chests, naked men, hot sex, you know, all kinds of debauchery. So I don't think anybody there was probably shocked, probably just thought, oh, that's part of the act.
I went with it, man. I really didn't know what else to do. So I was just like, all right, this is happening. This is happening.
Now, I think they're closed right now because of COVID restrictions, right?
Probably. I don't know.
As far as I haven't seen any events posted on their website or Facebook in about a year. So I'm assuming that's why they're closed. But
I'm not 100% sure of this, but I feel like the ad imagery that you see, like, you know, that you mentioned, like the furry, you know, bears, you know, for FUBAR, that whole thing. I think they have intentionally been using like the imagery they started and launched FUBAR with, into the now. And maybe that is, I don't know, maybe that it helps how it's perceived.
Yeah. I've never been there. So next time I'm in LA, I'll have to check it out. Now, both of those bars had a little bit of a seedy, sexy image to them. But the next bar that you mentioned is a polar opposite to those. Beige was like elegant, fancy, upscale, originally in a penthouse location in a high rise on Sunset and Vine. And then they moved. But what did you like about Beige?
Every single thing that you just listed. And the fact that it was the first time that I was able to go to a club that played music that wasn't the pop I heard on the radio, and it wasn't club music that required, you know, ecstasy and drugs for it not to all sound exactly the same. It like doesn't move me naturally. There was something about this that just did.
Yeah, it was quite an experience from what I understand. The original, I think the original location burned down. I think they had a big fire there and they had to move, and they moved a few blocks away. But everything I've seen about it, it was just so nice. Like, it looked like a place you could take your parents or somebody, you know, for dinner. When the clubbing wasn't going on.
Well, the dance floor was very tiny and very packed. It was more of a small dance area with a lot of booths for VIPs and reservations. And so you'd look back and there would be the X-Files director, Brian. Huge, one of the biggest Hollywood directors there is. I can't think of his name to save my life right now, but he did X-Men and most of the Marvel movies. He would always be there with his two wingmen trying to, you know, bait home a really young looking boy. And you'd see other people there. That was kind of nice. That kind of cool too. And also there was just no other space like it. Like, they moved it from that location to a different location on Hollywood, and everything about it changed. The whole vibe changed. I will say though, they had to close. They had to fucking close, because you took the elevator up to the top floor and before it stopped at the door, it would literally go, whoop, 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 whoop. Like, you thought you were going to drop every time. So it was a joke amongst us, but we really were all mortified.
Yeah, but it's nice to have a bar that's got a little bit of a different vibe than every other bar down the street, you know. That's why I'm kind of excited. Even after COVID, apparently Lance Bass says he's opening a kind of mega club in West Hollywood. And from all the press that I've read about it, it's supposed to be, you know, upscale, fancy, all the bells and whistles kind of club. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing something like that come back.
Well, I think that, and you know, West Hollywood is exactly like the place for it. There's a market. There is a huge market of overspenders, and it's great for sure.
Yeah, and it's nice to know that after all these bar closings from the last, you know, year and a half during COVID, it's nice to know that there's going to be some fresh blood in the bar circuit. We're going to see some new, you know, new places to go in different cities. There's a great new bar called The Q that just opened up in Manhattan also.
I have been to The Q. Thank you.
Have you?
I went on the night, I think it was a Wednesday night, and there was a piano bar, you know, come up and sing if you want type situation. The guy was really great. I Venmo'd him a very nice tip, and we couldn't stay very long, but we went to check it out. I think my boyfriend is friends of the owners or the promoters, and so I know.
There's three owners. One of them is the guy that owns Boxers in New York.
Okay.
And he's also in the construction and development business, so he did all the build out there. All the steel cages and catwalk and everything that you see in there, he did all that. I interviewed another one of the owners just before they opened, Frankie Sharp. And Frankie Sharp
was about mid-30s, not white, I don't know the race, maybe mixed race.
I think he said he was Asian. Part Asian.
No, that might be it. I think this person used to be my housemate in New York City.
It's possible.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Well, he's one of the owners there, and then there's a third owner who was also a promoter in Manhattan. And they also have a cast of celebrities as investors there. So it's pretty, you know, pretty cool. The whole place, the way they've set it up and everything. Now, another bar that you mentioned that you really enjoyed is a bar that I'm not sure I've ever been to, but I've been in the building. You mentioned the Rose Room at S4, and S4 used to be called Village Station, right?
Yes.
And it's still owned by the same people, the Cavern Group.
Cavern owns basically the entire gay strip minus three businesses. Yes.
Yeah. They own JR's. They own Sue Ellen's. They own S4. They own the mining company. And I've been trying to get with them to talk about some of the bars because they've owned many bars in Texas over the years. I think they owned the OP back in the day, the old plantation, and all kinds of other bars in all over Texas. But I don't think I've ever been to S4 since it's changed names.
It changed names at least 10 years ago, at least maybe 12 years ago. That's what it's always been since I've been performing there. I knew of it as a Village Station bait on stories from Del and Leslie being there like in the late 90s. So don't know when that happened either.
But the Rose Room apparently has a special place in your heart.
The talent is so great. Everyone that works in that, and the venue is great. It's a really big space. It holds about 600 people. And I get to perform typically in the middle of the drag show, and they have like the best drag show. I'm sure they have awards confirming this. If not, I'm here. I'll vouch for them. They have the best drag show in the entire, and I'd say the South and almost anywhere in the United States. And so, I've also worked there the most of any place I've ever worked in my life. My one man show that was comedy, to all my music. And I just always had the greatest reception. I had this huge, this massive stage, lighted background, and just it's just quality. And that's why the Rose Room is the Rose Room, because it's fabulous and it's big, and it feels like a Vegas showroom. You just are sucked in.
Yeah, Catherine's always had a way of making their bars work. I think they got the formula down. I think they've been in the gay bar business for 40 years or more. They've been doing it for a long time.
And I'm grabbing my apple. Sorry.
No problem.
You guys, I'm very authentic, and you're getting me as real as you can possibly get me, but I really need this for brain power.
I guess just talking about the Rose Room makes you feel like you need to eat something, right? Soak up some of that alcohol.
No comment.
So every time you've gone on tour, on a bar tour, you've always performed at the Rose Room as well, haven't you?
If I didn't once or twice, it was for logistical reasons. But otherwise, every attempt to, which is probably at least, I don't know, 8, they've always said yes.
And then when you were not performing, you would still go there as a customer just to enjoy the environment and watch the shows and
Yes.
And the hot boys.
When I'm in Dallas, that drag show is my priority, my evening priority, you know, so I bring my friends, I get a table at the front, and I live my best life.
And conveniently, if I'm not mistaken, the Cavins have a shuttle that runs you to the mining company and then back to the bars on the strip there, because it's a little bit of a walk away to go to that one bar. I remember when I used to go there, we would always use the little shuttle and go hop all their bars. Because
what was it called before?
What, Village Station?
No. The place that the shuttle took you to.
Oh, is it Throckmorton Mining Company? TMC?
Yeah.
Kind of a Levi Leather bar, and it's a couple blocks away from the others.
What was the old name, though, that it changed when it changed 8 years ago?
I don't know.
I thought you said it. Move on.
I was thinking it was a mining company. I thought they had changed it from Throckmorton Mining Company to TMC, but that may just be an abbreviation everybody uses because there's too many syllables in Throckmorton. but that crowd is crazy. It's right in the heart of the district in Cedar Springs in Dallas, and it's really the only place you need to go. You could go spend the whole weekend there and never leave. You could go to the bars, little restaurants, cafes across the street, do some shopping, cruise the boys down the road in the park, whatever. So it's quite a fun place. So now you've relocated. You lived in Florida for a while, correct? You lived like in Spring Hill or somewhere in that area?
Well, Spring Hill for high school. But as an adult, Panama City Beach from about, I think, 32 to 38. Minus 6 months twice in New York City.
And then you moved. Did you move to Texas at one point or no?
No, I love Dallas. I love Texas, but they would need to install outdoor air conditioning for me to live there.
I know what you mean. I lived in Austin for a year and a half. And
you know what? I had two friends who, as soon as marriage was legal, they sent out invites, and they had a wedding in Austin in the middle of July that was black tie formal, that was outside in a garden in the middle of the fucking day.
That's crazy.
We're not friends anymore. Like, I was like, you have crossed every line. This is torturous.
You should have pulled a trick out of Bruce Valanche's bag and worn a t-shirt with a black tie on it. So here I am, black tie and all. But yeah, the last Labor Day that I was in Austin, Texas, that weekend, it was 115 degrees on Labor Day weekend. And it had been over 95 for like 60 days in a row. So it was a red hot summer. It was crazy. But there's some fun bars there too.
I have my air conditioner going. I have a fan in the corner to help, like, it's a wall unit, like, push it throughout the rest of my bedroom. And it's hot in Mexico. It's really hot. So I feel you.
But at least you have the beach nearby.
Right out my window. Absolutely. I mean, like, looking at it now. Yeah.
And you're in where? Puerto Vallarta now? Is that what you said?
Yep.
So that's a kind of a gay party city too. Kind of.
There's a whole part, like, I wouldn't call it the gay part, but they call it the Zona Romantica, which is, it includes the, like, the 1.5 streets of gay bars, but it also just includes, like, a lot of other naughty things. And I lost my train of thought again. Help me.
The Zona Romantica.
Yes. Zona Romantica.
So it's got erotic shops and gay bars and all kinds of stuff in there.
Yeah. Yes, it does. And I don't know why I'm telling you this now. So
I had a friend of mine.
I lost it.
I have a friend of mine who passed away about 2 years ago. And he and his husband and a group of their friends used to go to Puerto Vallarta every year, and they would rent one of those big houses on the beach and have this huge parties. He would go out. I mean, he would ship huge crates of party decorations to Puerto Vallarta so he could decorate the house for the parties. And he would fly in a DJ and they would have these crazy wild parties. Apparently there's like some kind of gay week there. That's, I don't know. But
yes, they have a Pride Week and they have a Bear Week and they have weeks for everything. But there is like a Gay Pride Week here for sure.
And I'm sure you'll get to experience that.
I not only experienced it, but hosted my party for 12 hours that day.
Was this just last week, or was this another?
It was recently.
Okay. I wasn't sure when they did Pride because everybody seems to be doing Pride in different.
I mean, it wasn't that recent. I mean, it was like in the last week of May or the first. You know what? We were the first one in North America, and so we were the Friday before the Saturday, Sunday when most of them start. We were the Friday a week before everywhere else was going to start. So.
Right then.
Yeah.
They got it kicked off right. So you've had all these experiences with gay bars, but that's really not what your life is all about. You're a performer and you always have got to have projects on the table. What is coming up in your life professionally now?
So much. A book I'm way further into writing than I ever thought I would be. These pool parties I throw, which have become like I'll brag on myself for a second. I don't mind. They've become so successful that they're being branded like Jason Dobley's Naked Pool Party on merchandise and on fans and contracts in place. So that's actually a bit more time consuming than it seems like. And I also help oversee their social media strategy. So that's a little bit time consuming.
Do you have any music coming out or is that kind of on the back burner right now?
I'm so glad you mentioned that because I want to get my laptop and my headphones and I want to listen to what I basically finished. I have three demos I'm choosing from and yes, I'm going to release one of them. I just don't know which one to go, to use yet. And also all three aren't entirely completed. So I got my favorite one so far. I got done all of my part. Now I just need my female vocalist to come in and lay down with the choruses with me. And then I'll have a demo to take to somebody that we know, then we can do it for real. So that was cool. And I'm just another writing session or two away from finishing the second song. The third one, it's in my head, but that's as far as it's gotten.
Yeah, sometimes that's the way it is. You know, it takes a while. People don't realize sometimes creativity takes a lot of work. It doesn't just happen. And
it takes inspiration. So you have to be inspired at the same time that you are, you know, that you're in an activated mood. So it has, you know, a few more variables involved than when we set out thinking that it does.
Right. It's not like you just grab a microphone and start singing off the top of your head and it becomes, you know, number one hit. That doesn't happen. It takes a lot of work in the background. Now, are you going to be doing any traveling, or are you pretty much stuck in Puerto Vallarta in the middle of paradise?
Well, I'm stuck here in the sense that I have a contract through mid-April. I have my first tour date the following weekend in Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's myself and Seth Sykes doing a doubleheader. The ticket information is not available yet or anything, but it's coming. And then my one man show starts here for 3 months in October. So what I'm probably going to do is take Monday to Friday trips to primarily see Seth, until he gets down here this winter for a long period of time.
It's not the worst place to be stuck. I've been stuck in Tampa for about a year and a half with this COVID mess and everything everywhere else being shut down. But, you know, I'd much rather be trapped in paradise with palm trees and sunshine around me than, you know, somewhere dark and dreary. So I don't know if you
can see me, but what I wanted to do just then while you were saying that was do this to you. And for you guys watching, because I think I want to get this started in the United States. In Mexican culture, if somebody says something and your response is like, oh, yeah, right, oh, I feel you, or I got you, or that's what I was thinking, it applies in so many scenarios. You just go. And I found myself doing it to a lot of Americans when I got to America, and they were like, what are you doing?
What's wrong with your finger, Jason?
I was like, what is wrong with you? Yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed talking to you about, you know, your history with the bars and some of the cool places that you've been. And at the end of the segment, we'll put up some links to your Facebook and your website and your Instagram or Twitter so people can follow you and see what you're doing and kind of check out what's going on in your life. And hopefully you'll get back to Florida sometime before too long. You know, it's back open. Everything, our governor will not allow us to shut anything down. So.
Oh, I remember having DeSantis as my governor, and I was just like, we are fucked.
Yeah.
This dude is something else, but.
He needed. Not only did he repeal all of the COVID regulations, like, you know, mask wearing and all that, he repealed everything, but he also issued an executive order that prohibits any city or county in the state of Florida from putting on their own mandates. So no cities can even require them, because if they do, the governor will come down on them. So
I read the same article, and I think there was actually even a minimum fine that was pretty, it wasn't like massive, but it was pretty hefty as well. But I definitely read this morning. I'm a news junkie, by the way. I read all the news.
Crazy.
Occasionally, I if something crazy is happening in the world, I love to go to Fox just to hear how they talk about it. It's like such a, it's like every other news channel has this like one narrative, one obvious fucking narrative. and you get to Fox, and it's just like the news part two show, and it's just all everything's fucking different. Perspectives are skewed, and you know what's sad is that I get that some people aren't trying to be stupid. They really they were raised to believe that like you could believe the news, and that's what they think they're doing.
Yeah.
So I wish there were a way for us to sue Fox News for, you know, these additional deaths due to their, you know, spreading of misinformation and just a lot of stuff. I think it's very fucked up.
Yeah, it's a crazy world out there. What are you gonna do?
Probably have a little bit more of my marijuana cookie and put on some music and watch it rain. Isn't that exciting?
Well, thank you for spending some time telling us about your history with the bars in the different cities. And we look forward to seeing what you're up to next.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but are you also doing the one like worst bar experience you've ever had type stories, or are you keeping this all positive?
You can say whatever you want.
Is there a worst bar experience? For sure.
So where was this tragic experience?
Play in Nashville. I was coming on in between the drag number, and video of my performance that YouTube was just around and had been circulating. And I did this thing where at one point I put my microphone in my backup dancer's briefs, and I sing a part of the song into the microphone and his underwear, and then we get up and we're dancing. It's just a silly, you know, sex gag. And it's against the law in Nashville to touch another person on stage below the nipples or above the knees, which meant like I couldn't do anything. I couldn't like even grind upon him. And so, and they had a sheriff at my rehearsal who told me, if you do any of these things, the sound and everything will be cut and you will be taken into custody immediately. And I was like, the fuck? And so I told the guy, I was like, listen, you stay far away from me. Just pick a corner. I don't want to forget that I can't touch you. I don't want to go to jail. All right. So that's part one. Part two is I had played 20 shows at this point. I don't know how many shows. And at play, the drag queens would not let me share the one and only dressing room with them. And I'd explain to them that I had touched all the girls at S4 that please not, be uncomfortable, but I have somewhere to get ready. And they like literally refused, went and got the boss. And the boss was like, I'm sorry, they're uncomfortable with you here. Do you mind going and getting ready in your car? And then we'll send security out to just walk you through the crowd on the stage. And I was like, all right. I mean, if that's what it is, that's what it is. And so that's what happened. And the last part of the story, though, the story has layers, is that as I left, they had their dress code policy on their door. And I can't remember this, like the specific things it said beyond like no excessive jewelry, no pants, hanging below the inseam. Women must be in skirts or shorts, no pants. Very, very like no blacks and no lesbians, please. Like that's what this whole thing read. So I took a picture of it and I posted to my social media and I was like, shame on you, play. This is like such a obvious, fucked up thing. And I want everyone to see like who they're patronizing. And their lawyer contacted my lawyer and threatened to sue me. And my lawyer was like, why don't you do that? Why don't you sue him over just exposing what's happening here? Go for it. And of course they didn't, but, and they eventually made amends with me and had me back, but it was very intense for, and then I was banned for several years after that.
Yeah, well, fortunately, there's a nice bar right next door.
Yes, there is.
Tribe is an awesome bar in Nashville. It's one of my favorite places in Nashville. And that concludes another segment of the Gabe Archives podcast. You can find more podcasts at GabeArchives.com/podcast. We also have more information about this podcast and links to the other podcasts we have completed. We hope you enjoy your trip down memory lane.